Go to TMA Electric in Port Huron for all your electrical needs. From service upgrades to LED lighting to a full system check and oil change for your generator, along with preventative maintenance. Call 810-266-1450 or stop by. They're at 2514 Chestnut in Port Huron.
Friday morning, 1380 WPHM. Caleb in for Paul as we say good morning to a very familiar voice that you hear every weekday morning just before this program on WPHM. It's Michael Toscano, host of Westwood One's First Light program. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Caleb.
Hey, thanks for coming on and for sticking around a little bit for, let's just call it a little encore for this morning's edition of First Light.
It's like the after party.
The after party. There we go. Let's talk about some of the big issues this week that came up in national politics. And when I was starting to arrange this interview with you earlier this week, I'm like, I wonder what Michael and I are going to talk about. And then all of a sudden, Monday night, we get news of this Supreme Court leak, and it's got everyone in D.C. and across the country talking about it. Of course, the draft opinion that it certainly does appear that both Casey and Roe will be overturned by the Supreme Court when they release their final opinions on that case. Michael, were you surprised to hear about this leak and also about the verdict that was reached?
I'm not so surprised about the verdict because that was always a possibility. The leak, however, is astounding and shocking and could have profound implications going forward on this court.
Now, there's a lot of thoughts out there on what might have motivated someone to want to leak this in advance. Different thoughts about, was it a Republican or Democrat, a staffer on the court? Was it a justice? And I'm just curious, Michael, do you see potentially one side benefiting more than the other because of this leak?
I don't think so, and that's why we probably will not be able to figure out the motivation until we know the actual individual or individuals who did this, because I don't see a particular partisan advantage for either side doing this. Now, it's possible that if you were in support of this particular decision, which is about as far as you can go, this is the ultimate, saying the actual underpinning of Roe versus Wade was wrongly decided. There is no right to privacy. There is no right to abortion rights in the Constitution. Therefore, we have to strike this down. That's as far as you can go. If you support that, and you know that inside the deliberations that maybe one or two said, well, I'll sign on to this draft and then see how what comes back, and then we'll take maybe another look at it, you might think, okay, Justice X is wavering. Maybe I can put some public pressure on this justice by putting this out, and we'll see what the reaction is, and maybe that'll shore up a potential weak vote. On the other hand, if you want to minimize the scope of the decision, you might say, if we have a public outcry and people see that the court itself might be seen as illegitimate or politicized by vast numbers of people by going this far, then maybe this will, peel off one member, because you already have the Chief Justice John Roberts, who is an institutionalist, for instance, and he has been the one to not want to make massive changes if it's not absolutely necessary. He always talks about just we're here just to call balls and strikes, not to make like legislative style changes. And he's also concerned about protecting the legitimacy of the court. So maybe you can find another one who would go along with him and reverse that decision. So it's about equal, except it's very, very difficult to imagine any justice actually changing a vote that they know will be recorded in history for anything other than they actually believe this is what we want to have happen. So I don't see an advantage there. Now, there's a third possibility of that somebody in the ranks of the clerks did this. Now, when clerks sign up to work for a justice, they sign non-disclosure agreements, a pledge, to say we will not divulge the deliberations, we won't talk about what goes on. Now, when people are writing books about the Supreme Court, they always go to those ranks of the clerks, who are bright young men and women who plan careers in politics and the law, Many of them become judges. Some of the justices on the court have, in fact, been clerks, and some of them have clerked for the justices that they've ended up replacing. And so they are ambitious people. And so you can get an author or a respected journalist can get those people to talk, but it's more general, talking about trends or what went into the mind of this justice when decisions were being made, that sort of thing. To actually provide a document is not only a breach of the court's internal security, but that's a step that, as far as we know, this specific and at this point in the deliberations, this has not happened before. So that's unusual. It could be a person like that who's got political aspirations who says, you know, I want to curry favor with a particular reporter. And so maybe you approach the reporter and say, hey, I want to tell you about this. And, you know, you don't tell anybody who I am, and I'll prove it with the documents, and you'll have that. And in the back of the person's mind is, this is somebody, as I move up the ranks in Washington, I'll be able to talk to and be a source for, and it'll provide mutually beneficial things. Because, for instance, if you work in an administration and you want to sway how a policy might take effect, you can leak information about internal deliberations, say, from the White House to a reporter, and then you get to see what the public reaction is, and that can sway what happens, you know, in the decision-making process. So that's a possibility, but again, it's a little far-fetched, and it doesn't seem like there's really that strong an advantage here for anybody, unless somebody just wanted to mess things up and cause the kind of tumult that has been caused.
Well, I mean, leaks are part of the political process. It's just the scale and scope of this leak is what makes it so unprecedented.
Absolutely. You know, we've had some things leaked, you know, before, but it might be maybe the day before they'll say, yes, here's the vote count. But that's almost always kind of widespread knowledge just among court observers who can sit through an oral argument. And from the oral arguments, most of the time, you get a pretty good idea of how the justices will eventually vote based, one, on their personal political orientation, and also the questions that they ask. And are they skeptical of the arguments of one side or the other? And so you can tell that, and you can analyze the situation without having any inside information. If you're a good court observer, you'll pretty much know how a case will turn out. We talk to Supreme Court reporters all the time, and I'll ask, how is it looking? And they'll say, well, the conservative justices on the court here seem to hold sway, but based on the questions that they ask. Or they might say, you know, this could be a win for the liberal side, because two of the justices on the conservative side seemed a little skeptical of the arguments of, you know, the other side of the presentation that's been given to them. So it's like reading tea leaves, sort of, but that's a lot different than getting your hands on an actual document, which we should point out, the Chief Justice did say, yes, that is an actual document. Now, he didn't go into any details and say, has that been supplanted? Because we know it was written in February. That's a while ago. And so there could have been two or three or four more versions. It might have been that when Justice Alito circulated this, maybe one or two came back and said, no, you're going a little too far. The language is a little too extreme. Tone it down, and I'll see what it looks like on the next draft. Or I believe Clarence Thomas is in charge of deciding who writes it, because he's the senior justice on the majority side. The way it works is, who gets to write the majority opinion? It's usually the Chief Justice, as long as the Chief Justice is on the majority side of the decision. They'll take a vote. It's 6-3. And that means the Chief Justice would have been with the six, and the Chief Justice would then assign who writes the majority opinion. In this case, the Chief Justice was with the minority, the three liberals, and so then it goes to the actual person left on the majority side, who's got the most number of years there, and that's Clarence Thomas. Clarence Thomas assigned this to Alito. So it may be that Clarence Thomas might tell somebody else, why don't you take a crack at this, and we'll see what you can come up with. So there's all kinds of ways that this document could be outdated by now. Of course, now everybody's clammed up. Nobody's talking. So we don't really know the validity of the document, other than the fact that it's an actual document. It was circulated. It was a draft opinion. But the situation in the deliberations may be in a completely different place right now.
Now, Michael, from my understanding then, and from what you just said, perhaps there's going to be some nuances to this final decision, but it appears that both Roe and Casey are still slated to be overturned, regardless of whether or not this was just to draft.
Yes. The only way it could go with those rulings not being overturned would be something that basically says, you know, all these state laws, go ahead, Texas, go ahead, Oklahoma, all the state laws that, for instance, say that you can't have an abortion after 6 weeks or 15 weeks. They may say, you know what, those hold up. You can still do those in the world of Roe versus Wade. You can still do those things. That would be, I would be surprised if that happens, but that could be a legal argument that you could make, that you can have those things. Now, in those states, they effectively do outweigh Roe v. Wade, but Roe v. Wade could still stand on the books, even if it has now been weakened by allowing these specific legislative actions in the states to stay alive. And so it's not quite as extreme idea of overturning what has been a constitutional right for over half a century. Roe says that the right to an abortion is constitutionally protected. And this, by removing Roe v. Wade, it is no longer constitutionally protected, which means each state can decide individually. But you can still have that Roe versus Wade enshrined in law and effectively nullify it in many states, but just by saying these particular cases can stand. And but I think obviously that's less likely to happen than a complete reversal of Roe v. Wade.
Michael, the other thing that's so astonishing about this leak at the Supreme Court is the fact that it really does undermine the integrity of the Supreme Court. We haven't seen a leak like this really ever in the history of the court. And it certainly also makes the court more of a political body, which, generally speaking, the courts should be nonpartisan.
Well, there's a reason why documents like this can be damaging to look at, because I mentioned earlier that one or two justices could go in a different direction after reading this. And you want to think of things like Supreme Court decisions as being perfect, as if, coming out of the ether perfect and not the result.
That's why we always say it's the law of the land.
Yeah. You don't want to think of horse trading going on where one justice might say, well, look, if you'll take this part out, I'll go along with that other part, as if it's a piece of legislation going through Congress. But that, in fact, is what actually happens. These are human beings. They are all political. I know where, they go in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and they all pledge, no, it's just going to be the issues, and I can judge independently. But they're human beings. They're all very political people who have been very involved, some of them, in actual political work in their background. So that when they're chosen by, depending on which president, the party of which president are chosen by, you know pretty much how they're going to come down on many of the major issues. But you don't want to see that. You don't want to know that. That's why they keep it so quiet. It's, there's so much tradition and history there. You know, when they have these conferences, nobody else is allowed in the room. It's just the nine justices, and they sit around the table. We know that they tend to bond and become very close personally, where you could have two people about as ideologically opposed as you could find, as Antonin Scalia and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, were close personal friends and spent their vacations together. Their families grew up together, but on the bench, they are at opposite ends, so they do bond in a personal way. And, when it's interesting, they have such tradition, and in terms of secrecy, when they have their conferences, nobody else is allowed in the room, nobody. And if somebody knocks on the door, it's always the newest justice who has to get up and answer the door and say, who's there? What do you want? Leave us alone. And right now, that's Justice Amy Coney Barrett who has to do that. And so they really pride themselves on being collegial and having independence and dealing with the protocols of secrecy and quiet behind the scenes, these arguments that they make. Oh, sure, because now you're looking around the table, you say, well, I wonder which one of these people, if it was one of us, who did it? And now, is there anything I say in here, any arguments that I make, and maybe I haven't fully thought it out in my own mind, and that could get out, and I will be then saddled with something where I was only in the process of coming to a decision, or maybe you're playing devil's advocate and asking questions, not necessarily because it's something you believe, but just to try to get somebody to come up with a response and defend themselves and in what they've written. It can have a chilling effect. And, you know, there are very, very big decisions coming up that haven't had the rulings announced yet. You have the Roe v. Wade and abortion. You've got some Second Amendment cases. There's a law from New York, a gun law that's, I don't know, it's like 100 years old or something, that restricts whether you can carry a concealed gun outside your home. They've got that one. We have school vouchers and prayer coming up. There's one or two cases on the climate situation. You got remain in Mexico and immigration.
That's just one big old grab bag of lightning rod topics.
Yeah, these are all highly politicized issues that now the court has to come out with decisions in this current atmosphere in which they're being looked at under a microscope, and people are wondering about the politics of this. And, you know, it's not, the timing on this is kind of unfortunate.
Well, Michael, there's certainly a reason why Congress doesn't also serve as the judiciary, and why the founding fathers wanted an independent body such as the Supreme Court. And I do agree, this does kind of tarnish the reputation and the legitimacy of the Supreme Court. We're out of time, but of course, you'll be back every weekday morning, 5 to 6 a.m., right here on WPHM with First Light, talking about this and many more political issues, and all of the news from across the country every weekday morning, right before this program on WPHM. Michael, thank you.
Caleb, as always, it's an honor to get to spend some time with you and be with your listeners.
And it's a pleasure to share the same airspace with you, Michael. That's Michael Toscano from First Light, and this is Caleb and for Paul on WPHM.